Dispatch. I'm usually republished by Counterpunch, an information clearinghouse in the U.S.
Okay.
So my articles can be easily found on the net.
Tom Dispatch, Counterpunch, Sputnik, and RT. You got a whole lot of places to go to. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll talk some more in the future,
thanks.
I think.
My pleasure, sir. Thank
okay,
you very much.
Okay, have a good day. And stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
That's right, Air Cascadia coming right up on KBOO Portland. Also coming up this morning at 10:15, join us for Flashpoints, more on the brutal assassination of Nelson Garcia, an indigenous rights leader in Honduras and member of the same rights group as slain activist Berta Cáceres. Also, in an in-depth follow-up report on the continuing dangers of the world faces of Fukushima. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews writer Leila Lalami about the Moor's account, her imagined memoirs of the first black explorer of America, a Moroccan slave whose testimony was left out of the official record. But up next, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate to today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Leidia Oi, produced by Imago Theater. The play runs from March 11th through the 27th at the Imago Theater in Portland. Set in a hospital in 1956, the Leidia Oi is an erotic ghost story written by Yukio Mashima based on a 15th century no play. Again, that's the Leidia Oi, March 11th through March 27th at the Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 17th, 2016. That would be St. Patrick's Day. You're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We have two outstanding guests today. We're going to have Stephen Zunis is back to talk a bit more about Syria, because this is a story that defies the word story. This is a true cataclysmic affair, and we want to talk about aftermath, because there will be an aftermath, and at this point the options don't look very, very good. It all looks, it's a pretty grim scenario, but to call it a story is the understatement of the century. We're also going to be speaking with Drew Spencer with Fair Vote about ranked choice elections, and it would have a profound effect on the country as a whole. This for every 4 years what would you call it? It used to be an election, but now that we are post-democracy, living in a capitalist world where basically you put your money on the table and highest stakes wins, we have a different kind of election, it seems, or at least we're evolving into a nation without any actual input from the citizens. That's something to think about. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to be talking about it. For one thing, the Coalition of Western States, Oath Keepers, all of that lot. Turns out that Grant County Sheriff Glenn Palmer might have got himself in a bit of hot water over a support for the what can only really be called domestic terrorists that took over Malheur. Seems that Sheriff Glenn Palmer was on the Glenn Beck show a while back. How do I know this? Because on the front page of the Grant County Sheriff's Office, not Sheriff Glenn Palmer's website, not his Facebook page, not his Twitter account, but on the Grant County Sheriff's Office, you can watch his performance on the Glenn Beck show. It's about guns, by the way. I don't want this to be a spoiler, but it's guns. And the weather for today is sunny, obviously, highs around 59. It's going to be breezy, though. East wind 9 to 14, gusting up to about 22 miles per hour. If you live in the gorge, believe it. Could get up to 34. And for tonight, mostly clear, lows around 39, breezy, east wind 23 to 26 again, same thing, gusting up to 40. And for tomorrow, sunny, highs around 60, winds continuing. We could again get gusts up in the high 30s, like 37 miles per hour. Oh yes, and out in the gorge, we feel every single mile of it. That said, I'm going to ask Stephen to just be a bit patient with us. We're going to talk election for a moment because we're surrounded. We're on all sides with something that is being called an election, but in no way, shape, or form does it resemble an actual election. It's literally a buyout. It seems that Donald J. Trump is the ultimate exemplar of white male midlife crisis. Other people of other colors don't seem to have midlife crisis. They just get on with it because life is precious and it's all too short. And they don't have time for the self-manufactured crises because they're already beset with real-world crises from birth to death. So Donald J. Trump, when you already have the private jets and the garages full of Lamborghinis and Maseratis and the mistresses and concubines and whatnot, what's next if you've got all that? Well, of course, it's obvious, isn't it? The presidency of the United States. As the saying goes, anybody can be president, and we do mean anybody. It's easier to be a president to run for election than it is to get a job at McDonald's. There's no application. There's no interview, unless you can call this fiasco, this farce, an interview. And on that note, we want to jump right into Fair Vote with Drew Spencer. Good morning, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, first up, of course, we've been talking about that, about what this is, and for off and on throughout the week, what ranked choice is. But just once again, could you clarify that for listeners?
Certainly. So ranked choice voting is a way of conducting elections. It's done in a number of cities across the United States. Under ranked choice voting, instead of voting for just one candidate, you actually are allowed to rank all of the candidates. So you can say, this one's my first choice, but if he can't win, this one's my second choice. And if she can't win, this one's my third choice, and so on. And what that allows you to do is it means that you can have a race with as many candidates as you like. You can have 3, 4, 5 candidates, whatever. And you can vote honestly for your first choice, your second choice, your third choice, and so on, because if your first choice doesn't have a chance of winning and no candidate has a clear majority right out the gate, then what you can do is the candidate with the least support can be eliminated, and you can look at who their second choices are. That way you can get sort of like a series of runoff elections, which is why it's sometimes called instant runoff voting.
Yeah,
you can actually get a sense of the head-to-head contest between the strongest two candidates.
And so if this is indeed an election and Trump's decision to buy America essentially as his next toy, his private, he will treat it as his private playground. And it will be his cronies standing by him and enacting his every whim. So in that sort of, and there are, in fact, as we are learning day by day, a huge faction of the populace that is will go along with it and even be pleased until it begins to hurt them. And wow, this is going to leave some serious scars on the American people. So is this really an election? How would ranked choice affect this particular event?
Well, it's interesting that you called it a faction, because that's something, elections without ranked choice voting, elections where you're only allowed to vote for one, that's something that they allow to happen, is that a candidate with a single polarizing faction, even if it's not anywhere close to a majority of the people voting, that candidate has a chance to win based purely on what sort of competition they're facing. So if the majority is split among multiple similar candidates, that candidate with their faction has the chance to really win. And really, I don't know that I've seen a candidate take better advantage of a vote for one plurality rule than Donald Trump is doing. Donald Trump, our polling suggests that he loses in a head-to-head race against more than one of his competitors. If the majority of Republican voters could unite behind one of the competitors, they would be able to beat Donald Trump. But because there's more than one out there, they're finding it difficult to do so. Now, Donald Trump, in our polling, we actually did a poll where we asked Republicans and independents to rank the candidates in the Republican contest. And Donald Trump was ranked first more than any other candidate, far less than a majority, but more than any other candidate. But he was also ranked last more than any other candidate. So he seems to be sort of this polarizing figure that has attracted some passionate support, but not a whole lot of breadth of support. That's a campaign tactic that does not work under ranked choice voting. Under ranked choice voting, you would need to reach out for those second choices and those third choices. You can't be going around insulting your competition or insulting groups of voters who might not rank you first.
That definitely changes the playing field. I have one last question before I have to let you go. It levels the playing field, but it does. How else does it? Does it really? Would it serve to counter something like Citizens United and this type of Supreme Court decision, which is obviously profoundly affected the way elections are carried out? How would that influence a Citizens United decision?
It's interesting. This is a new area for research, so we don't have real hard data on it yet. But what we've started to see is candidates in places with ranked choice voting winning elections even when their opponents outspend them, even when their opponents bring more money to the field. And that seems to be able to happen because under ranked choice voting, again, you don't benefit from running that traditional campaign where you run lots of TV and radio ads smearing your opponents. You do best if you just reach out to people with a positive vision, what you would do as distinct from what your opponents would do. That seems to be the campaign tactic that really works under ranked choice voting, not going out and flooding the airwaves with messages about what a bad person your opponent is.
Other attributes that have pretty much nothing to do with election, unless it's the after party. Thank you so much, Drew. I am so glad to have you on the show. We want to talk to you some more about this as the election continues to spasms its way across the country. In fact, history will not... we're not going to be writing a real tragedy. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'd be happy to be on again in the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks. This was Drew Spencer with Fair Vote. I'm very pleased to have Stephen Zunis back with us. We're going to be, I would hope, and I would like to invite Stephen to record a longer segment, which we could put on the website and really get into the ramifications of what's happening in Syria. Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for being with us again.
Actually, Chris, I think you asked me to talk about that recent article I did on the bipartisan efforts to recognize the Israeli annexation.
Yes, I did. I have. I will. I would like to do more on Syria, but I did ask you that. Thank you. That was a fascinating article. We did put a link to it. Could you talk a bit about, first give the listeners an overview of what you wrote in that piece?
Well, basically, Congress passed a trade bill recently for the first time in Israel as including Arab territories recognized by the international community as being under foreign occupation. This is part of the fast-track legislation which helped ensure passage of the controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership. And basically, the clause is an attempt to force the Obama administration to pressure potential U.S. trading partners to no longer boycott products made in illegal settlements or discourage their companies from supporting the Israeli occupation. The Obama administration rejected that clause, but it is in the law. They're upset because the European Union said you could no longer claim that products made in settlements could be marked as made in Israel. But meanwhile, you have a number of members of the Senate, including Ron Wyden, writing the trade representative and the EU foreign policy chief, accusing them of implementing restrictive and illegal trade matters measures because they insisted on distinguishing between the Israel and the Israeli occupied territories. And meanwhile, there are other initiatives in Congress, define Israel as Israel and territories controlled by Israel, essentially supporting the maximalist right-wing Israeli position of right of conquest, to see the occupied territories and illegal settlements